Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto, and I'm here with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today, we have the pleasure of listening to an interview with Ruth Wong Pine, who lives in Hong Kong, China. She met Reiki in 1990 through a friend of hers, and now describes Reiki as a kind of Japanese Qigong. So, in a few minutes, we'll start the interview. I'll be interested to hear what she has to say about Reiki through a Chinese perspective. Last week, I had Volker Brink talking about the kanji of Reiki, the Japanese kanji of Reiki, and what each line meant, and how that enriched his understanding of Reiki, the energy, and Reiki, his practice. If you did not have a chance to listen to this program, luckily, all these programs and the first one, What is Reiki, are archived in this broadcasting network. So somewhere, I can't tell you where, you can find the archive and listen to it yourself. Meanwhile, this is a series of interviews that I wanted to present to you as listeners in order for you to have different perspectives of this question, what is Reiki? What is Reiki the energy and what is Reiki the practice? For me, the energy is the essence. This is what also some people call the source. And Reiki the practice, for me, is a form that allows the student of the practice to come in contact directly with the energy of Reiki and to use it consciously in daily life. We all are imbued with Reiki. Reiki is life itself. But often, and for most of us, this energy has become taken for granted, or we just assume that it will always be there. It will, but if we consciously use it, then we have an opportunity to really put our oar in the water and become partnerships with this energy rather than simply floating along the river with none of our own input into our own journey. So one of the things that I have loved in this practice is realizing that I too can become a partnership in my own life, in my own journey, and not feel at the effect of fate or destiny or even accidents, should you believe in accidents, which is a whole nother program. Okay, right now we're ready to start our interview, and Ruth, I want to welcome you to our program today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Phyllis.
And I would really love to hear how you came to Reiki, like when was it, and who were your masters, and yes, just a little bit of your story.
All right. In 1990, a friend of mine who took Reiki gave me some treatment, just as a practice for her. She gave me three treatments. I didn't know what that was about. I fell asleep. I thought I would be I'd be there talking with her, but no, the first treatment I had, I fell asleep. So I had three other treatments, and that was it. And one day I heard on the radio that her masters came back to Hong Kong. This happened in Hong Kong. And I rang her and she said, yes, the masters are in Hong Kong. And that was Thursday. And Saturday I was sitting down in my first Reiki class, not knowing what this is about and haven't got a clue why I was there. So I took my first degree Reiki from Esther and John Beltheim. Esther is from England, and John was from Australia. And after that, I was so excited with Reiki, I was putting my hands on anybody and everybody who came my way. I was treating people or trying to find out what this energy that I was taught. Perhaps half believing, half not believing, because my background is nursing, and nurses need to have data. And this energy work doesn't have any data. It's too kind of airy-fairy. So, but I put my hands on anybody and everybody that I could. And I still remember in those days when there were any dinner parties, I would be the center of talk about Reiki nonstop at my table. So people thought I was very weird. But anyhow, those were my days of extremely external enthusiasm. And then I became a Reiki master in 1992. Esther and John Valentine initiated me. And I started teaching then the week after I was initiated. And during the day, I was teaching in a university in Hong Kong. And in at night and weekends, I was teaching Reiki. So I was having this double life.
Wow, pretty busy life.
Right. So I had to make a choice. And in early 93, March 93, in fact, I made the choice of resigning from my teaching at the university because I wanted to devote my time to Reiki. And this is a little funny because March 1, I typed out my resignation letter and was going to hand it in. It was a 3 months notice, so I thought, well, you know, by the end of the semester, I would leave. When I went back to my office, my colleague said, Ruth, you've been teaching this for 8 years, and, you know, there's no conflict of interest with what you are doing with this new thing you have. Why don't you stay? Because, I mean, the pay was excellent. It was kind of like a golden handcuff. So, I thought of it, and my head said, yes, you should stay. So I said, okay. I didn't hand in my notice. On, I think, March the 10th, I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning, dizzy, so dizzy I can't see anything, feel anything. And I Reiki myself for about 4 hours, rang up a friend and said, hey, I've got this dizziness. Now it's just a headache. What do you think is happening? And this woman just laughed at me. Ruth, your head and your heart is not in alignment. Your heart wants to leave your job. Your head doesn't want to leave your job. So that's why you had this dizziness. That afternoon, I wrote in my resignation letter and just resigned from the university.
How amazing. What a wonderful sign that you had.
Yeah, yes, I did. Great. I did.
So as a person who's been raised in the Chinese culture, do you see, is there some kind of concept in the Chinese culture like Reiki for the Japanese? Or do you feel, yes, let's start with that question first.
Okay. This, because it was introduced to me by two non-Chinese people, it was very difficult for me to kind of put it in context when I started teaching. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of repeating what my initiating masters taught me. But then it didn't feel right. It wasn't me. I wasn't owning up to it, to what I was teaching. And then I came up with this. This is because Chinese people not know a lot about qi.
Mm-hmm.
We have qi gong, which is the action, the function of qi. So the way that I now explain to my potential students would be it's Japanese qi gong. So it's different from the Chinese qi gong, but it is from Japan. Because once we start talking about qi gong, we have... In Chinese, we have the movement qigong and the silent qigong, and then I did not want to go into all this, you know, compare which type it is. So once I said it's Japanese, it becomes new. So
I see. New and old all at the same time.
Yeah, new in terms of the concept the Chinese have.
Right, yeah. Right. So what would be your definition of the energy of Reiki?
The kanji itself, the way it is written, from a Chinese point of view, we have a number of interpretation. Qi is the same. The qi is the same. The bottom kanji is the same. But the top kanji has a lot of different connotations. It could be spirit. It could be ghost. So initially when I started teaching, I did use the two kanji in teaching my students or letting... I didn't advertise, but to let people know I use those two kanji. But my little while after that, my students all came up to me and said, you know, don't do that, because this energy is a different energy from what people might think with those words. So as of then, I just use Reiki. But once they come to class, then I explain it into the kanji word. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what does what's the Chinese word for kanji or the Japanese characters?
It's linghei. Reiki. It sounds like Reiki, but it's linghei. This is in Cantonese. In Putonghua, in the Mandarin, is lingqi.
It's so amazing that these characters that Fuka so beautifully described to us last week, the Japanese kanji, are pronounced so differently in Cantonese, Mandarin, and Japanese. And now we have translated these characters into our Western alphabet. I'm not quite sure what it's really called. Roman letters, maybe? I don't know. Sorry for the linguists out there who know the answer. Now it's spelled R-E-I-K-I, and we pronounce it in English, Reiki. Of course, in Japanese, they don't have the hard R sound, so their sound for this R is more of a mix between R and L, which I have to admit I have not mastered yet. So I won't embarrass myself by trying to say this over the internet, where many of you might actually be able to pronounce Reiki in Japanese. Ruth will be back in a few moments with more about the difference in language, what the effect was in her own classes, and how she sees Reiki through her Chinese background. It's time now for our commercial break. We'll be back in a few moments with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Hello, this is Phyllis Verimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today we have the pleasure of being with Ruth Wong Pine from Hong Kong, China. She is just enlightening us with an explanation of the Chinese and Japanese language for Reiki. The characters that we see that look so beautiful are called kanji, and these characters or kanji are look the same in either Mandarin or Cantonese, which are the main Chinese languages, and then Japanese. Yet they are pronounced quite differently, and their meaning is similar, but also there are some differences. So now Ruth is going to talk with us about these differences and also her understanding of Reiki, universal life energy. Am I right in saying that the actual characters in Chinese, either Cantonese or Mandarin, and in Japanese are the same?
Yes.
You just pronounce them quite differently.
Well, a little different. See, the Japanese language came from China. And when you say kanji, it's in fact I think it's Hanzi, which is Chinese word.
Ah. You
know, kanji. So the words are the same. I can read some of them, provided it's not simplified. You know, there are some simplified symbols. But the words itself, the actual word is a word that we Chinese and Japanese are alike. Sometimes the meaning are like chi. You call the Japanese say ki, we say chi. It's similar.
And it's the same concept,
you
think?
Yeah, that is definitely the same concept.
And what is that concept? Can you explain it to me?
well
in 2 minutes or 5 minutes or less.
Okay. The Chinese believe in qi. We have qi in our body. The movement, the meridian is called qi. Our body is qi. We've got when we do acupuncture, when anybody receives acupuncture, is actually unblocking the meridian of the qi. So that is the qi of the body. And it's the personal qi, and there are qi outside. So there's different types of qi.
Uh-huh. And is there like a hierarchy of qi? Or is it all the same, just the expression is different?
Well, I really don't know, but my thinking is that there is qi in the outside of your body, of my body. My body is my internal qi.
Uh-huh.
And I believe, this is my belief, I'm not sure, but I believe when the Chinese talk about, we Chinese talk about qigong, it's the qi in our body trying to get the qi flowing in my own body. And when I've taught a qigong master, and I asked him, the difference between the qi of Reiki and the qi of qigong. And he said it's different. And a number of my students have told me they felt different. I don't know because I've never learned qigong, so I can't say.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
But in concept, the word itself seems to be the same
general
concept.
General word.
General word.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So in your experience then, practicing Reiki for all these years, how would you describe the energy? Like, my grandmother used to say that Reiki means universal life energy. And without the context, for me, of treatments and practice and understanding, that doesn't mean terribly. It doesn't go inside of me or connect with me in any way. And I'm wondering if you have something that you can say to that, like, what does it mean, universal life energy, for you?
For me, I teach my students that this is the energy outside of me. That's the energy around us, not necessarily in the room. It could be out in the building, we have got lots of high-rise buildings, so we can't see the trees and things. We don't have that many trees. But it's just outside of myself. And it's kind of different energy from my own energy, because I can actually feel it, and my students can feel this energy when they treat themselves or treat other people. It's the warmth in their hands that they do feel. Sometimes it's kind of like in the middle of their palms, starting from the middle of the palms, they feel this a bit of warmth and perhaps some movement. It's different from the, I wouldn't say different, but what I feel and what my students often feel is the movement of qi in the body once they start having a Reiki treatment. And the way that I can say is there are movements that I can feel in my hands or my body when I do a Reiki treatment. Whereas if I'm not, I'm sitting still, I don't feel all these movement in my body.
Well, that is fascinating because, I'm Japanese American, so kind of an emphasis on the American part. And but I was raised with an understanding that everything has what I would call now ki, or has energy, universal life energy. And in my understanding, it's a little bit like a Shinto, basic Shinto belief, where everything has kami, or has divine energy, everything. Mm-hmm. And so when I put my hands on somebody, I'm just connecting with this kami, or ki, energy. So it doesn't feel like it's differentiated, and it certainly doesn't feel like movement. So that's fascinating, that in your perception of talking about ki or chi, that it's about the movement of this energy. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be very interesting. I'm going to have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. But that's how I think, that's how I feel it. And quite a number of my students say, oh, I can feel this moving.
Yeah, great. Well, I do too, but it wasn't my... It wasn't how I related to it, so I'm really happy to have this difference. That's great. I think that as a Westerner, in my mind, I'm always amazed at the thread of languages and how some languages seem to really contain the essence or the transference of not just the sound, but also of the meaning. And here we have very similar meaning, but very different sounds. So in my traveling around the world, what is really a beautiful thing for me is to know that wherever I go, and I speak in front of Reiki groups all over the world and have wonderful interpreters, I want to say a little gratitude in public for all the interpreters that have assisted me in over all these years in many, many languages, that the word Reiki travels around the world meaning the same thing. It has to do with universal life energy. It has to do with a kind of practice using universal life energy. We may have very different theories about what we want, what we think Reiki is, where it comes from, who Dr. Usui was, where he came from, all these differences. But the thing that strikes me and moves me so much is that the experience of the contact of Reiki is the same. And this feels like a really beautiful thing for me. I have spoken to people who have practiced many different forms, many different theories about where it comes from or how it should be applied. But it seems like in the beginning, for people who have contacted Reiki clearly, there is this feeling of coming home. There is this feeling of connection. There is this feeling of inner peace. And this can change someone's life dramatically. Sometimes that change is in a place that feels very disruptive or very painful or very upsetting to the people around and sometimes to the Reiki student themselves. And eventually, as the process works out, this process comes around to showing the student that they now are in a lifestyle that's more congruent to their original self, to their authentic path. No matter how it's pronounced, because each language, of course, has its different emphasis, no matter how it's delivered, there's a common thread to it. So I'm looking at Reiki now and the practice of Reiki as not just a Japanese healing art, which is where it came from, of course, but as a human healing art, something that touches not our person that comes from a culture, not a person that comes from a society that has certain belief systems, but a human being that has innate needs, desires, emotions, and longings. And it is my theory that each of us has a very similar longing, a longing to be one, a longing to have deep contact with another person, a longing to be one within ourselves. And we as human beings have created many religions, many spiritual paths, and many understandings of how the world works in order to satisfy this longing. For me, what Reiki has given me is an idea for myself where I can combine these different theories, test them out in my own life, and be able to come into a place where I have my own experience of what Reiki is for me, what I have my own experience of what my destiny is, and I have my own experience of how I can enrich and create relationships in my life that work for me. So Reiki has become for me this wonderful human art that allows us to come back to the origin of language, the origin of the practice, the origin of how it has started within each individual, and see the similarities as well as celebrating the differences. It is now time for our commercial break. We would like to take one, and I will be back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, and the segment of Ruth Wong Pine from Hong Kong sharing her Chinese view of Reiki and what it has contributed into her life. Thank you very much. We'll be back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Please welcome back Ruth Wong Pine from Hong Kong. Ruth, we were speaking about how in China the concept of qi is movement, has to do with movement. And I was thinking about my own concept of Reiki and qi, which felt a bit more stable to me than your qi concept. And then I realized that one of the things that I say to my students and I'm really aware of in my life is that when I get stuck and the energy doesn't move, then I feel terrible. And when there's movement of energy, even though I might be exhausted or I might be upset or I might be just having a great time, somehow movement is the thing that carries me, and it is actually kind of synonymous for me with hope, that as long as I have movement, there's hope that things will change and be different if that's what I'd like. And then sometimes I'd like for things to stay the same because they're going so well, but I know that there is always movement. So I will have to think about this, and perhaps I didn't realize that the definition of qi could have the energy of movement within it. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. So do you have anything else you would like to add about the movement of Reiki, or about Reiki, the word, not for the form of the practice, but for the energy itself? Do you have anything else to say?
Well, my feeling of Reiki is that it's very gentle. It flows through my hands gently. Somehow it is different from any of the qi I feel. Like if I walk into a church, I can feel the energy of the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mm-hmm. so strong that it can give me a bit of a headache. But with Reiki, for me, it's a different type of feeling that I have. Now, when I'm talking about this movement, I'm not sure whether it is Reiki moving or my own qi moving once it gets into my body. But certainly something is moving. So I can just conclude myself, because I don't feel it if I'm just sitting still, I cannot feel my energy, my qi moving when I'm sitting still. when I put my hands on my body, then I can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I put it as Reiki. The other interesting thing that I found, one of my Reiki students has got terminal cancer, and she is also seeking the treatment, the traditional Western medicine treatment, and she also goes to a Chinese herbal medicine doctor who gives her herbal medicine, ready-made medicine, as well as acupuncture. So what she does now, she was told she had terminal lung cancer, age 50, but in fact, nobody would know that she has got cancer because she does these three things. And one of the things she does is that she comes to us twice a week. She's a second degree student. She treats herself every day. And twice a week she comes to us for her treatment. And after her treatment, she goes directly to this herbal doctor, the Chinese doctor, who would give her acupuncture. And of course, you know, the Chinese doctors, they always feel the pulse first.
Right.
And initially, the doctor was so surprised finding her pulse being so different. I've heard it many, many times now. People who have had Reiki go to them for treatment pretty much immediately after. She can feel, this doctor can feel the difference of the pulse rate is pounding a lot and very, very strong. But for this client of mine, a student of mine, it was so much so that when the doctor was starting to put in the needle of the acupuncture, the doctor herself feels the energy.
Wow.
Felt the energy.
Uh-huh.
And she was so, so impressed with that. She's now my Reiki 2 student. And this is the doctor. And I think we're talking about doing some work together to try and see and to do some piece of research. But I haven't really had time to deal with that. You know, to sort of, it's just so simple. Those patients of hers having Reiki before and after and just feeling the pulse, and she can feel which area is right, which area is wrong. I mean, wrong, having problem, organs having problem. So this is another very interesting part that I thought, now we have got actual feeling from a person who doesn't know Reiki,
mm-hmm.
and is able to. Now she's so converted that she sends her patients to me.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, you've kind of picked up the thought that I had in my mind. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, so if Reiki, the energy, is about movement,
yes.
Sometimes what I hear in the healing circuit of all kinds is that if somebody, for instance, has what we call terminal cancer mm-hmm. or some illness, that people say that Reiki moves too slow. Their idea is that Reiki is not fast enough. So what this brings me to is, in the Chinese culture or in your own understanding of how Reiki works and coupled with your profession of being a nurse and being in the medical community, I'm wondering how you hold all of these different thoughts. Is it possible that Reiki can be too slow? Is there a limitation of speed and movement? Is it supposed to be fast? Or is there a kind of dignity and some kind of value in the movement being slow and deliberate?
I really don't know whether the movement is fast, slow, or whatever, but I do know that there is movement. And this is the movement, with any acupuncture theory, my understanding is that it unblocks the meridian and helps the body qi to flow. And with treating myself with Reiki, I feel the energy flowing. So first thing is, it is flowing. Whether it's fast or slow, I don't know. But the second part of that is when you're talking about, when you were asking about whether the healing is fast or slow, I feel it depends upon that person's, or a lot of elements of whether they really want to be healed, or where they are at their journey. We all have our journey to, we would say the end, but it isn't the end, you know, to death. But depending on who, the time of that person.
Uh-huh.
And I always said to people who are dying that I go to see them, and one of the things, of course, is fear. So I become pretty, I wouldn't say forceful, but it's the gentle sort of strong question I would ask. Are you afraid of dying? That's the first thing. The second question I would say, okay, if you are not afraid, or if you are afraid, just think that it's kind of like we go to the supermarket getting a ticket. If our ticket is called, we are called.
Right.
So that is the concept of we are just waiting, not knowing when it's our time. So when it comes back to healing, it could be healing to be able to handle the death,
mm-hmm.
rather than healing as we would like, well, we, a lot of us would be expecting the physical healing or
right.
even emotional healing.
Mm-hmm.
So healing occurs, but I do not know at what stage. So it's not fast or slow. Of course, especially people in Hong Kong, we move really, really fast. You talk about New York, I think we would probably equate New York or faster than New York. So the expectation of healing from people in my part of the world, of course, is fast. But depending on those that understood, like this student of mine, she goes around the clinic that she visits, this Chinese doctor's clinic, practically twice a week as she visits me. So she would go around and tell people that she's not fighting cancer. She is living, coexisting with cancer, recognizing the cancer is still there, but containing it, not letting it get worse, not making herself sick by being overtired, whatever. Once she knows she's got a flu coming on, boom, she would just treat herself and really be ready for it. And when she comes to me, she say, "Oh, I've got this." I say, "Fine, let's just spend more time on that area." So she knows exactly. She knows her body. She knows that this is the illness she has, but she accepts it and not even fight it or get rid of it. It's the coexistence she has, which really taught me. She taught me so much.
That's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time for our station break. We'll be back with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, in a few minutes. So, in the first three segments, we have had a wonderful interview with Ruth Wong Pine from Hong Kong, and she has given me many things to think about, and also segued into a beautiful story about the healing with Reiki. One of the things that we will address later on in the programs is the essence of the word healing, and what is it that is brought to mind when we say the word healing or healer in the context of Reiki. So stay tuned in a few months for those programs. Meanwhile, there are several questions that have come from other listeners. The first question that someone has asked was from the show before this one, where Volker Brink speaks about his Reiki master, Inger Droog, who, the question was, who is she and where did she come from and did she have a connection with Hawaii Tekata? Inger Droog lived in Canada. She immigrated there when she was a child and was raised there and has raised her own family in Canada. And some years ago, in I think 1978 or 9, she met Hawaii Otakata and took first degree and I believe second degree from her. And then was initiated in 1983 or 84, I believe, by Wanya Tuan, who was also a master initiated by Hawaii Otakata. Just after Inger Drog's initiation, which happened in Sweden, because that's where Wanya originated from, she came to Holland, or officially the Netherlands, to teach Reiki. And this was a kind of spur-of-the-moment thing, and she was really surprised by the reception that she got and was very excited, because I was in Canada at the time and knew Inger then as a fellow student. She continued to teach in the Netherlands for many, many years and was really, as we could call it, the mother of Reiki in the Netherlands. So the whole of the Reiki community has been influenced by her teaching and by her presence there, which is still, I will say, very present, even though she has now moved to Costa Rica. Another question that came from the past shows, and this is from the first show, What is Reiki?, where I spoke about my own experience and understanding of Reiki the energy and Reiki the practice. I kept talking about my grandmother, and somebody asked me who that was. So, my name is Phyllis Furumoto, and I'm a granddaughter of Hawaii Otakata. Hawaii Otakata was a young woman about the age of 34 when she went back to Japan to have an operation. And during this time, when she was in Japan, she had an unusual experience and asked the surgeon if there was another way for her to be healed and for her not to have the surgery. And he said, yes, but it takes time. And he referred her and guided her to Shijiro Hayashi's clinic. And there she embarked on a number of weeks of daily treatments, and her condition became better and better. And as she became healthier, she became more determined to learn this healing art called Reiki. Eventually, she convinced Shijiro Hayashi to accept her as a student. And she lived there for almost a year and lived Reiki. So when I was born, she had already been practicing and teaching Reiki for many, many years. And she was my grandmother, but as usual, I don't know about usual, but sometimes we would like to have a different kind of grandparent. And that was certainly true for me. But just as I turned 30, I realized that I wanted to do something with my life. And it was a fortuitous moment when my mother said, maybe you should travel with your grandmother because she really needs someone to travel with her. And she was almost 80 and doing full teaching tours at the time. So eventually, I went on this journey with her, and my grandmother eventually became my Reiki master. This was a very long and interesting and sometimes painful process, but 28 years later, it has been extremely rewarding. Another question of the same program is that I kept saying that I had amazing life experiences. And someone said, I'd like for you to tell us one. So I thought and thought, because it seems like I can't really separate my experiences. And at the same time, when I teach, I end up having teaching stories. So I racked my brain. And I guess the one that comes to me is this. One of the things that I say to my class is that Reiki, or being in the energy of Reiki, really leads you to fulfilling your dreams. When I was 16, I was a Girl Scout and had been for many years. and I had the opportunity to go to the International Girl Scout Jamboree that was in Farragut, Idaho, in this year. And I went there with 10,000 Girl Scouts from all over the world and 5,000 staff members, adults, who were trying to keep us in some kind of semblance of order, which they did quite well, I must say. And during this 2 weeks, I had the most amazing experiences of living in a community where we shared the same values, we sang the same songs, but in different languages, and there was a feeling of spiritual connection that I had never had before with any group of people. Several years after I became a Reiki master, I was sitting in a group of people from several different countries, singing the same song, but in different languages, and realized that in this moment, I was realizing my dream from when I was 16. Beautiful experience. It's now time to end the show for today. I've had a wonderful time with Ruth and a wonderful time with you. Please stay tuned next week for our program, and our guest speaker next week is Fran Brown, a master who was initiated by Hawaii Tokata in the late 1970s. Until then, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.